All right, who's kicking us off? Hopefully, me driving here won't be too loud. I'll be pulled over here in just a minute.
Sound too bad.
Tell you something. Good luck on the test.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. My son actually is taking the test. He's actually going to enlist in the Air Force. He's got to just go through his METS test. He scored real well on his ASVAB, so he's going to sign up. So, yeah, excited.
It's difficult.
Academy in the spring, Mike?
No, he's actually just he's enlisted. He actually got a nomination to go to the Naval Academy, but wasn't able to make the final cut, so he's going to enlist in the Air Force.
Gotcha.
So,
are you military?
It's all good. Me, no.
Oh,
I'm a
what
farmer.
About your brother?
No, none of us. We're farmers from Denver.
Gotcha.
No farmers.
Who's kicking us off?
Go ahead, Larry and Jane. You guys haven't been on in a while.
Jenny, kick it off what we did in the last hour.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Well, we put an offer in on a house. Semi-local. It's about an hour and a half from here.
Okay.
So,
tell me about it. What does the property look like? How big?
It's an older farmhouse in a farming community that is just going downhill. The population's low. It's got three railroad lines that run through the town.
Okay.
But it's not a war zone or anything. The house sits on 1 acre. It's how many beds? It's a big house. It was the guy's grandmother had it.
Five bedrooms, two baths.
Okay.
Two that on both stories or
total?
Yeah.
Total.
The upstory, all the good new electrical wire, and the downstairs are still fused the old way. It's on city water and sewage. Has access to city gas. The house from the outside looks good. My thought on it, and the person we were talking to, they had planned to make it into an apartment upstairs and rent both of them out, but apparently they run out of money or whatever, which is not uncommon. We're just doing the numbers. We sent the offer into them for $40,000 and give us 2 months to close in on it.
Okay.
And that's what they were asking, $40,000. And, you know, my thought is if it could broke into two apartments, a Section 8, somebody would get damn rich with it. They have to put $25,000 into the house, but somebody will make damn good money.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to ask you next. Well, the first thing, can it be zoned as a two-unit?
Yeah.
Okay. And what do you think it rents as a single family, and then what does it rent as a two-unit?
Well, right now, Janie's looking it up. She was asking all those, and I said, we're dying of paralysis of analysis. Send the damn contract. Quote unquote. So now we're going to find out if we wasted our $10.
Right.
But
so what?
My gut.
When you throw it in the Zillow really quick, and what does it say the rents are?
You look it up, honey. Get off spin.
I will.
Okay, we'll look at it. It is. It's an hour away from Augusta, Georgia. An hour out of Milledgeville. An hour or so from us. And she's fixing to look at it right now.
Okay.
The young man. The granddaughter's husband was telling us that, you know, two police officers live diagonal from the house.
So who will – it sounds like this is a more rural area.
It's in town, but it's a very small town, very, very small town.
Okay.
25 almost 2,600 square feet.
Look at the
good sized place, like you said.
Look up top. Go.
Yeah, I see that, but it's not giving the rent.
Well, it's showing the Zillow's having it $276,000.
200?
Is it that two?
$27,000.
$27,000
is
the
estimate.
Sherry.
We'll back off and get the rest of our information. Somebody else talk.
Okay, yeah, let's figure out. And I can look it up here on my phone, too. I'm curious to see what it says. So what's the population of this little town? Any idea?
No idea. I've went through it through the years. You know, it's a small It was a good farming town 60 years ago because of the railroad tracks, a lot of farm area, rich people on the outside. But right now, it became a people population.
Hey, go to List Source. Not always, but a lot of times what happens in these smaller towns is somebody in town has the majority of the money, and so when properties go for sale, they just buy them and rent them. And so there may be somebody local. So what you can do is go to List Source, put in that zip code, and see if you've had some absentee owner activity in the last 12 months and see what number spits out. Because that means that somebody's buying property there specifically that they don't live in. If you don't find much or anything in the last 12 months, go back 24 months and see what comes out of there. And then if you get some, you're going to want that list because you're most likely going to sell it to somebody local if it's a small little town like this. Not necessarily, but.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to some of the ones in Tampa that pull up their big pants and say, we'll buy anywhere if the numbers are right. I'm going to take them out of the woodshop.
How far is it from Tampa?
It's a long way.
Is it?
Okay.
So here's the other thing you can do. Figure out which county it's in. Because, again, you're going to have, you know, some blue-collar farm workers, and then you're going to have a couple of them, the bigger farms and ranches, where a ton of money is made. And they'll park their money in real estate, and they know these little rural communities. And they'll just, you know, you'll find landowners out there or, real, you know, investors, landlords that are buying this stuff up. So.
That was my thought on it. The numbers are right for a great. We just got to make sure that it's not going to take 50,000 to get it up to speed.
What do you think fix up is? 50?
The guy told me 40 would do it, but you know, I suppose he when we talked to him, I don't think he really knew. He said the roof is in great shape. He didn't remember.
What's the address? I'm going to look it up on Zillow quick. I want to see what it looks like.
On Zillow?
What's the address?
No, it doesn't come up on Zillow. The address is 116 South Main Street. The zip code is 31089.
31089. In Tennille, Georgia? Is that how you say that?
Yes.
The last sold, Z estimate's 27,600, 2592 square feet. Last sold for 25,000 on May 26, 2016. Let's see here. It says it has three pictures. Oh, no, that's a different property. I clicked the wrong thing here. Let me see.
They have had renters in it. So that, like I said, it belonged to the girl's grandmother.
Gotcha.
They said it's been in their family for years and years, so I don't understand that it sold recently.
That was a different one. That's what he said. Oh, this is a different
one. No.
Got the front porch, kind of a light yellow color, silver car in the driveway. Assuming we're looking at the same thing. 116 South Main Street, Tennille, Georgia, 31089. Is that right?
Through Zillow, or are you looking at something else?
I'm on Zillow.
Oh, I don't have a picture on Zillow. How did you get a picture?
I'll tell you what, you guys, Zillow's a weird thing. So Brad, Rob's business partner, was talking to somebody, this is just a couple weeks ago, they're on the phone, and he goes, yeah, look this property up on Zillow, and he gives them an address. And Brad goes, see, the estimate there is X number of thousand, whatever. And the guy goes, no, it's not. And apparently, I never knew this. I thought a Zestimate was a Zestimate. But based on where they were, and I guess where Zillow knew they were chiming in from, it told them the house was worth two different numbers.
Oh, wow.
So it can be all over the board, yeah. So if I'm seeing one thing and you're seeing another, I'm not too surprised by it.
Huh.
Let's see here. It says rent's estimate for this home is $1,000 a month. You know, I'm not sure how accurate this is. Again, this is out in a more rural spot, but.
$1,000 a month.
Cool.
Well, it's in the city in a safe zone.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't sound too bad. Because there's a lot of agro businesses there that, you know, there's always middle management that move in that's looking for a house and can't buy a big farm.
Yeah, there could be a market for it. I've never worked in the rural areas, but see what happens. And that's what I'm telling you. Go to the zip code and list source and see if there's any absentee owner activity, and then go to the surrounding area. You can go to the county or whatever, or just grab the surrounding zip codes and plug those into list source, because you can just add those in, right? So if you go to UnitedStatesZipCodes.org and do a search for this one, it'll show it on the map, and then it'll show you all the surrounding zip codes. Write those down. Take them over to list source for that. You click absentee owners, and then your first drop down is geography. Click zip code, and then you'll pick your state, and then you'll be able to enter in the 3, 4, 5 zip codes that you pulled off UnitedStatesZipCodes.org, and then go through the same steps just like Module 1 and see how many absentee owner transactions are in that area. And I'd probably start with the last 6 months. And if you don't get many, go to 12 months, and then you'll see if there's any investor activity in the area. And if so, buy that list and skip trace it. I mean, those are your buyers right there.
Mike, I have a question for you.
Sure.
So I heard you talking about Zillow. I'm not sure if you guys, you know, got in this conversation about 8 minutes after 4, but did they find their property on Zillow? I'm wondering because I mean, is that like a good place to search? Because I've heard that the information can be a little inaccurate.
No, they didn't find it there. We're just using it to pull. I don't know that they, here's the thing about Zillow. Sometimes the Z estimates are spot on. Sometimes they're not.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure they use some kind of algorithm to figure it out. But here's the thing. The world uses Zillow. So we want to at least be aware of what it says, because if you go to sell a property for somebody and you say, hey, I'm selling 123 Main Street for $45,000, it's probably the first place they go. If they're a real estate agent, they probably go to comps, but most investors, they don't have MLS access. And so the world goes to Zillow because that's what they know to do. And so I at least want to know what it says. If I'm trying to sell a house for $25,000 and Zillow says it's worth $18,000, I know that through education, I'm going to have to overcome some perception and say, no, right? If you go on Zillow, you're going to see it says it's worth $18,000, but that's not the case, right? Here's the thing. Buy this thing. It needs $10,000 in work, blah, 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 blah. There are other comps in the area that I can send you. In other cases, Zillow will help your cause. You'll be, you know, you'll say, hey, I'm trying to sell this thing for $25,000. I look it up on Zillow and it says it's worth $40,000. And then so, you know, just based on what it says, we either educate to why it's wrong or let it help you sell the deal.
Okay.
If I use it. But we want to know what it says because a lot of times it's the first place people go. So I always look to see what it says. And for the most part, not right, it usually gives me a general idea. Like I was looking one up today that we have under contract, and the Z estimate's $150,000. So then I went into FreedomSoft, and I looked up comps, and I think Zillow's low because the place fixed up, I think, can sell for $170,000 to $180,000.
Right.
Zillow had it at $150,000. But I at least want to know what it says. And then it gives me an idea of rents. And it told me, you know, this property rents for about $1,300 a month. And a lot of times on rents, I always double-check rents with my property managers. When we get a deal under contract, I shoot them a text or whatever and says, hey, we just got this address under contract. Zillow says it rents for $850 a month. Does that sound right or wrong? That leave me close. The rental estimates a lot of times are usually within 5 to 10%, has been my experience. So no, they didn't get it on Zillow, but it's a good place to go look. And then the other things too, like I just looked it up, a lot of times it'll tell you the year built, the last time it was sold, And so you get, you know, you can punch in an address and get some information on the place.
Okay, that's good.
So I still use it quite a bit.
Mike,
so guys,
I just did the list source.
Yeah.
And I just used that zip code.
Okay.
And over the last year, there's only 4 absentee owners.
Yep. So go back, again, it's a smaller area. That makes sense. Go back 24 months. And see what happens, and whatever the list, you want to buy it. I think LiquorCourse will sell you 4 records. I've never tried, to be honest.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Go back 12 months, type that zip code into UnitedStatesZipCodes.org and grab the 5 or 6 zip codes that surround it. Because if you're still in that town, I don't know how many zip codes are in this town, but if somebody bought a rental on one side of town, they'll probably buy it on this one, or right, because they know the area. They know this little town that you're in. So I'm running numbers quick. If we have $1,000 a month gross rent, obviously 70% is 700. Whoops. 700 times 12. 8,400 net annual, and then you have it for 40. What do you want to sell it for, and what you think it needs 40 grand in work? Is that what I heard?
Let's look at it, 40 grand in work, because it doesn't have a heat and air. And if we did that to make it 2 apartments, we'd have to break the units up.
Yeah, that would probably require a little bit more. And you're going to have some code stuff. You probably have to have some firewall between them, and you want to look into the city for that. But let's run it as a single family.
Yeah,
so 8,400,
okay.
And then what do you want to mark it up? 10, 20, 60? What do you think?
At least 10.
At least 10.
Okay. So somebody, they're basically buying it for 50. They've got to put 40 in. They're at 90, a little bit in closing costs. Let's call it. So we have 8,400 net annual divided by, all round up, 95,000 is an 8.8 cap with those numbers. So what you need to know is the buyers in the area that'll buy that. That's what it comes down to. And this one's going to be tough to get an inspection on, right? Because you probably don't have anybody close.
No, not really.
Yeah. This one'll be a little challenging. Here's what I would do first. Buy that list off list source and try and get a hold of as many of those buyers as you can, because they can do your inspection for you. You just have to have a lockbox or a way to get them inside and say, hey, you know, just call them up. Hey, it looks like you bought some investment property in this area. I've got a little one under contract. Here you go. I mean, if they're from the town, they're going to know the house. So that's where you got to start. And they'll tell you you're priced well, you're not priced well. Here's the story behind that thing, yada, yada, yada. But that's where I'd start. Is that list and list source. So grab the surrounding zip codes, add those to list source, go back 12 months, and see how many records come up. Sound good?
Yep.
Yep.
Got it.
Okay. It's going to be a little harder to find data on this thing, but that's fine. Just go to the locals, because they're going to know it, and they're going to be comfortable with it. Somebody there owns rental property, because somebody owns rental property in every city. You just have to find that person, and that's how we do it, is on ListSource. They're also do a Google search for that town and type in real estate agents in that town. Because the town's not big, so everybody knows everybody. So you just got to call up an agent and say, hey, I'm a real estate investor. I've got a little property under contract in your town. Who there owns rental property and is looking for rental property? Because they're going to know it. And there's most likely going to be more than one agent, and they're all going to know who owns rental property in that town. So that's another way to do it. And now that I just said that out loud, I would start there first, because you don't have to skip trace anything. They're going to know whoever the agent is going to know who the investors are in the area. No question. That's why I can't live in a small town, because everybody knows your business.
So how do you – let me ask you.
Some people
like
it, and some people don't.
How do you compensate the agent now that you're putting a real estate agent in the mix?
Depends. You can typically just have them add their fee on. Say, hey, you know, do you know the buyer, the client? Can you get me in touch with them? You know, what do you charge? If I was going to bring you a deal, we'll just add that commission onto my price. Let's do that. So you'll see wholesalers a lot of times they will say in their email when they blast out, like there's a couple in Denver that's really active. They shoot out multiple deals a week, and they say, here's our price. If you're an agent or you're working with an agent, add your commission to our price, and that's your price. So they have real estate agents on their list who are looking for deals for investor buyers. And so if Jason and his wife send out a property at $100,000 and they want to make 2 points, then they add it on there, and that's the price they give their seller. So the wholesalers, they still make the same amount. Typically, that's how it works. Does that all make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Ruby, start with the locals. They'll know. Curious to see where this goes.
I've got another general question.
Yeah.
The other ones like us, wholesalers, how many have an actual website and how to utilize the website if they do have one?
I think most have them. Most websites aren't effective. They don't do a whole lot with them. It's a good place to park a deal, but I'll be honest with you, the majority, like for instance, with our operation with Paul and I, we bought domain names. I haven't launched a website yet because it takes time, and I'd rather be on the phone finding deals and finding buyers. Because nobody once has asked me, they said, Mike, I'm not going to look at your deals and tell you, I know you have a website. They don't care. So, you know, where it's handy is, let's say you want to drum up some buyers and you use the FreedomSoft tool for buyers, for cash buyers, or you buy a list from ListSource and you want to send out a postcard and drive people to a website, they'll hit your squeeze page, give you their name, email, phone number, and you want to do marketing to build the buyers list quick, there isn't a better way to do it because it's all automated. But at the end of the day, I'm just calling people right now to sell deals. We're just hustling them that way. So, yeah, put it on the list. But we're not going to talk about it in this group. I mean, if you want to launch them through FreedomSoft, it's pretty fast. But you do not have to have a website to get paid in this business. So it's not even, right? We don't talk about it anywhere in the modules. Over time, yeah, I think you should have one. But right out of the gate, let's go.
We'll put that to rest.
Let's go find deals and meet buyers. What's that?
I was searching yesterday for prospective buyers.
Yeah.
I ran into a national company, and it's in about 9 different cities, fixing to launch in other cities, and talked to their acquisition person in Tampa, and they are buying dirt, lots of dirt, in these other towns too.
Yeah.
And I just need to put it up someplace and list the towns and who it is and to contact people. And somehow try to put myself in the middle of it. If I saw somebody in St. Louis or if I saw somebody in Orlando.
Right.
Just trying to do that. Should I just?
Yeah, they have their time and place. Here's what I want to tell you guys on this one. You probably don't have buyers that are looking in this area. I'm not going to say to not pursue it. I think it's worth a little bit of time and energy, but start with the agents and see if you can, you know, see if your price is even worth looking at for somebody local. And I was talking to Mike Gerace about this maybe last week. I can't remember, but you're going to get deals of all kinds, all shapes and sizes. And Mike just happened to ask me this question on the day when I had told a guy, this isn't what we buy. He sent me over 30 properties in one of our markets, cool houses, all these old brick Victorian things, 2,800 square feet, built in the early 1900s. I mean, from a coolness standpoint, these are fun rehabs, right? And I looked through the whole list, and I told my acquisitions guys, because they were pretty fired up. I mean, they're like, look at these prices, because we were buying these. He had them listed for like $19,500. So not a ton of money for these cool old houses. And my my head acquisitions guy, Chris, was pretty fired up, like, Mike, check these out. And I looked at three addresses, and I was like, man, this isn't what we do. And here's why. This house is built in 1912. We're going to estimate the fix-up at, whatever, 60 grand. It's really going to be 110, because once we open up the walls, there's going to be a mess all over the place. We're going to have to replace the whole house. You know, it's going to take us 4 months in construction. The budget's way over what we want to spend, and this isn't our deal. I want a little house that's 8 to 1,200 square feet. And, again, this just goes back to, what is your business model? What are you looking for? Because then people are going to throw all kinds of stuff your direction. So what do you buy? And when you know what you buy, you also know what you don't buy, right? And I told Chris, I was like, this is not what we do. This is way too much. This is headache. These are major renovation projects. We want to buy a little 8 to 1,200 square foot house. Our construction times, you know, our construction budgets are $5,000 to $25,000. We're going to be out of them 60 days tops for construction, right? And then we put a renter in it, we sell it, we move on to the next one. That's what we do. So I explained to Chris, and then I called this guy back, and I said, hey, man, I appreciate you sending it over, but this isn't what we do. This is our model. And so then he said, oh, I've got some that I think are a better fit, and he sent us over a few others that we're looking at. But I bring all that up just to say, right, the more you start moving, people are going to throw stuff at you. And so I want you all to know, what is it that you buy? Because when you know what you buy, you know what you don't buy. And it's really tempting to chase what you don't do, because you're thinking, bah, I could probably, if I could put this together and then that together. And I'm just telling you, what will happen is, right, you're going to put a lot of time into this stuff. And it could go somewhere, but the chances are it won't. And you could have taken that time and just, you know, flip 2, 3, 4 more deals that are in your wheelhouse. So I want you as business owners, I want you to always be thinking about, what do we do? Let's go get good at that. And, right, just be conscious of, what are we saying yes to, and also, what are we going to say no to? All right? So I'm just throwing that in. I don't think you guys were on the call, Larry and Janie, when Mike and I were having that conversation. Because he had somebody approach him and said, he said, yeah, I've got this house for sale, and I want to sell you this lot too. And Mike's initial reaction was, great, I'll sell a house and I'll sell a lot. And then as we started to unpack it a little bit, he's not looking for dirt buyers. He's looking for property buyers. And then we started talking about the neighborhood, and there's likely not anybody looking for dirt in this part of town, right? And so it's not, let's grab everything we can and try and make a deal. It's, let's figure out, okay, here's our sweet spot. Let's just go do this over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So, right, you're just going to have to be thinking. I'm telling you, I think this is worth a little time, but if you get into this a couple days and some hours, and you feel like either we're at the wrong price, nobody's buying here, whatever the case, I think there's a decent chance you can move it. Whether or not your price is good is to be determined. You got to figure out who's buying in that part of, in that little town. So pull some research on it quick, and then be decisive and say, yep, I feel like we can move this thing, or let's just cut ties and go find something back where there's a larger population and we know we can find buyers.
Yeah.
So keep me posted on it.
Okay.
I want to know on Monday, either you got really good feedback tomorrow and over the weekend and you feel like you can move it, or you've cut ties on it. Let's not let it go past Monday to at least have a decision on where we're going.
Okay.
What else, guys? Anything? How many offers out this week? You know?
Was that the only one?
I know this one. Is this the only one, or you have more?
I think it's the only one.
I think this is the only one we have.
Here's what I want. I want you to set a goal between now and next Thursday. I want 10 offers out. Can you do that?
What? See, the problem is we don't have anybody really making calls and acquisitions. We are in the process of hiring.
I'm talking to two of you. I'm talking to two of you.
I don't make calls.
Larry, this is on you, Captain.
Well, I spent one day this week reading the motivational on what the problem is with myself, and it's called focus. Do not multitask. Know how to say no. Put the stuff garbage out of your head and concentrate. So
he's a little ADHD.
You have got to. I think we all are to some degree. If you don't have acquisitions on your team, you are acquisitions.
Oh yeah.
Right. So in the meantime, we can't settle for, well, we don't have that seat filled. You are that seat until it gets filled so that we can have offers. So can we make 5 offers by next Thursday?
I will be on the phone because I picked up 3 people of buyers in Tampa, one that buys dirt, one buys tear down, and one says, I don't pay over $300 per lot. And I said, are we talking about St. Louis lots or Tampa lots? And I said, your $300 was misleading. He said, $300,000. I ain't paying anything more than that. I said, okay, we're on the same page now.
Gotcha. So that's good stuff. That's good stuff. You got to talk to both. But I'm saying, here's the thing. You guys want to be coached to a result. That result will not happen if we don't make offers. And I'm talking to myself, too. I talk to my team about it every week. We have to be making offers. Have to.
I was looking for dirt buyers because we have come up on our bird dog has produced 150 empty lots. And so I was trying to, you know, the simplicity way of calling these lot owners to try to match them up with somebody that buys dirt.
Hey, here's the thing. If dirt is what you sell and property, I'm all for it. I went on that little deal there a few minutes ago to say, just know what it is you buy. If there's a big appetite for dirt in Tampa and you know how to find it, you know how to find buyers, great. You'll buy it and sell it just like you will a property. It's really not much different. Although, right, you don't have to do much of an inspection. You know, go look at it. Yep, dirt and weeds. Okay, this one's good to go. You may get into some other details on, you know, is the electric on site? You know, some of the builders are going to be asking that kind of stuff. How does the plumbing work in underground? So you can learn about it. I'm just saying, know what it is you do and go do that 1,000 times more, right? That's the goal. Because whatever's going to happen is somebody's going to say, hey, here's a little commercial lot. Hey, here's a 8-plex. Hey, here's an apartment. And then we're going to think, oh, I could just go move this. And I'm telling you, each one of those different things has its own little kind of universe. And if you don't know it, you're just going to waste time in this learning curve. So know what you do, and let's just go do that 1,000 more times. And so here's the thing, guys. Offers, offers, offers. Larry, 5 offers. I didn't get a verbal yes. Can you make 5 offers by next Thursday?
I'm still doing the ADD thing.
Oh, man.
I will make the phone calls next week. And if the phone calls are made, then I will make the offers.
That's what I want to hear.
It'll be legitimate offers, not a, you know, just throwing something out there. I'll have somebody that wants some information.
We're going to go from uncomfortable to comfortable. So, hey, I heard it, and everybody else on this call heard it. 5 offers by next week. Here's the thing.
Next Thursday.
Yeah, because I want to know about it on the call. We'll see how you're doing on Monday, and then that's still going to give you a couple. Tell me you've got some offers on Monday. Let's make it happen. You guys want the result. That's why you're a part of the group. I'm telling you, you will never get the result unless we make offers. That's all there is to it. That's all there is to it. Simple as that.
That was our afternoon. Right. I said, throw an offer. Throw it at him.
Right. Get it on the table. And the more you do it, the more comfortable it becomes and the easier it becomes. So make it happen. Who else? Offers, offers, offers.
Hey, Mike, it's Mike.
What's going on?
Hey, so a question. I started making some calls on that old list I have and came across one lady who returned my call, left me a message. She's a for sale by owner seller.
Okay.
What tips do you have for for sale by owner people?
Yeah, so she's probably gotten a bunch of calls from realtors because new real estate agents sit down and look at for sale by owners and say, can I help you? And so a lot of times it's pretty refreshing to just say, hey, I'm not an agent. You know, how many of you have called you so far wanting to list your house? You know, we work totally different. I'm not an agent. I don't work with agents, that kind of thing. You know, and then just you're looking for a problem. When you're talking to sellers, that's all acquisitions is we're just sniffing out problems. So they listed it themselves, which tells us usually a couple things. They don't want the property anymore, and they'd like to get paid as much for it as they can because they probably or they most likely are just saying, hey, I'm gonna list it myself because I don't want to pay an agent, whatever the case. So just get into the conversation. Hey, how long have you had this thing listed for?
I found it on Zillow.
Why'd you originally buy it?
About 4 months.
Okay, so it's sitting there. And is that a long period of time for this market? Or?
Sure. No, I'm not real familiar yet with San Antonio down there, so I don't know.
Oh, that's
up in Salt Lake, I'd say no.
That's probably long.
Okay.
For days on market.
Okay.
Yep. And just figure out what is the pain and how big is the pain. Because here, at the end of the day, whether it's for sale by owner, listed, it's all irrelevant. Is the pain there, and is it big enough that they're willing to talk to you? And through, right, just asking them some questions in the script, you got to find that out. If there's no motivation and they're just like, yeah, I don't really need to sell it. I just thought I'd throw it out there. Okay. When you get serious, call me.
Yeah.
Because until then, we don't have anything to talk about. I mean, you don't word it like that, but you don't.
Right.
You want to talk to people who want to sell.
Right.
And that's all there is to it. So that's, you know, that's the thing. Hey, it's been sitting for 4 months. Have you had any interest? Has anybody made you an offer? You know, what were those offers? Why did you say no? What's your bottom line? What are you trying to get out of it? You know, and then if they're unrealistic, that's where we use fix up and repair estimates, right?
Right.
Hey, let me just ask you a few, you know, questions about it. What kind of condition is the property in? Oh, it's in great condition. Okay, so it's livable now. Fantastic. Hey, when was how old is the roof? When's the last time the roof was replaced? Probably 35 years ago. Oh, okay, so the roof probably needs to be repaired, right? Something like that. Yeah. How old's the furnace? When's the last time the furnace was replaced? And then, right, you're looking for pain. And what you're doing is, if their expectations are off, through questions, you can start resetting them, right? The furnace is out, huh? Okay, so that probably needs to be repaired. You know, what did you pay last time you replaced the furnace? You know, my neck of the woods, what, $3,500, maybe $5,000, depending on how old it is, something like this. That sound about right? And now you're starting to do all this math.
Right.
What's the square footage of the house again? How big's the roof? Okay. Any water damage, leak, you know, any big trees or the branches are smashing shingles or anything like that. And we're starting to paint this picture and get them into a more realistic place on the asking price. And the thing about it is other people are calling up or shooting them a postcard with just a lowball offer. And they're like, that's ridiculous. I would never take that. It's the conversation and the connection that gets them to rethink.
Okay.
Okay, so now we're going through this whole thing, and by the time you add it up, we're like, so, you know, from what you told me, I'm just doing a quick little math here. This place needs probably $25,000, maybe $30,000 in work. Does that sound reasonable? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this, Mike. What are other, you know, have you seen what other places are selling for in the area?
Well, that's what I was going to
do. What do you think this thing's
before
worth?
I called it back.
And then we should just start backing it off. Here's the thing, though. And right, sales. This is why you want a salesperson, because they're gonna lead the other person. Nobody wants to be told they're wrong. You just help guiding them to right. If you come in and say, "Oh, you think it's $5,000? No way, this thing needs $25,000." They just put up a wall. But when you go through the script and you're creative about it and you're asking questions, they're the ones that are telling you how beat up the house is, and they're resetting their own expectation for the sale. So, and here's what I'm telling you, the conversation really only gets there if you feel like, yes, there's some motivation. What's the pain? There's either pain or there's not. That's all, you're right. If there's not, you're wasting your time. If there is, have a conversation, because nobody else is calling them having a conversation. They're just shooting them a postcard that says, you know, call me and or whatever, let me sell your for sale by owner. So I would guess they, you know, they put it on the market, and there's probably a pretty decent reason to get rid of it. Sometimes people, you know, just throw it out there, but, you know, I'm guessing it's worth the conversation. So when you talk to them, how, what did you find out so far?
Well, I called and left her a message. She just called and left me a message last night. So I thought I'd ask her to call her back tonight.
Okay. Yeah, you've just got to go, you know, kind of break the ice. Hey, I'm not a real estate agent. How many agents have called you lately asking if they can list your house for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. I'm not them.
Yeah.
And then I like that statement about, you know, I'll be honest. I own a small company, and, you know, we buy real estate, but we only buy when there's a legitimate problem in place. So, you know, if you've got a couple minutes, let's have a conversation about this thing. I'd love to see if we can help you, but, you know, if in the next 2 minutes we realize that, you know, you're just trying to sell this thing and it's not really causing you to lose sleep at night or any kind of heartache, then I'm not, you know, we just don't have a fit. And, you know, you get back to your evening or whatever. And that way you just totally eliminate all the pressure. I'm not everybody else, and you tell me, basically. That's what it just says is, if you tell me there's no issue here, and right, there's really no problem to solve, you know, my company buys real estate, but the way we look at it is we're problem solvers, right? We just help people who are losing sleep at night over a property that they own for whatever reason. Sometimes it's vacant, sometimes, you know, whatever, you throw out a couple examples. Sometimes it needs a lot of repairs, they don't have the money to do it. Give me a couple examples. And, you know, that's where we come in and help solve their problem. You have 2 minutes. And now you're just getting to know them. And then people love, right? People love to talk about themselves.
Right.
We all do. So now you're just asking them questions. Hey, how long you own this thing? What'd you buy it for? What was your original intent? And you go right into that script, and they're just telling you all the stuff behind it. Did you ever live there? Did you have tenants there? Yeah, what was that like? Do you have great tenants or bad tenants? And right now, this is just one person getting to know another, but that's where the bond is created. That's so important in this, because now your offer is going to, right, it's going to carry some more weight because they want to work with somebody they know, like, and trust. So, yeah, it sounds like you're playing a little phone tag, but I would open it up with that. You know, just curious, how many agents have called you up lately and said they want to list your house?
Sure.
Right, 3, 4, 5, and it may not be whatever. If they don't, say, wow, I'm really surprised. Usually new agents just pound the phone on for sale by owners and, you know, and ask if they want to list the house. So, anyway, I'm not an agent. I'm not licensed. We, you know, we work differently. So, see where it goes.
Okay.
I'll be curious. I want to shoot me an email. Let me know how this conversation goes. But, yeah, you're looking for pain. It's there.
Okay,
it's not.
Sounds good.
All right. Sometimes here's where you got to be a little creative too. Is sometimes you know there's a pain and they don't know there's a pain yet. So, you know, why? Let me ask you this: why do you think this thing's been on the market? You know, St. Louis or San Antonio, pretty hot market right now. You know, in your opinion, why has this thing been listed for 4 months and nobody's bought it from you?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of ask them, right? Because what can happen is, if they're looking for a retail buyer, but the place needs work, that's never going to happen. So you're just going to have to be a little bit clever in how you break the news to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let me know how it goes.
Okay, I will do that.
Good stuff. What else? Anything else we can clear up here?
Nah, that's all I got right now. Trying to get some more bird dogs. I just sent out a Craigslist post about half an hour ago, and I've already got 2 people emailed me back. So.
Okay.
See if I can get it some more properties found.
Yep. Well, again, I go back to it all the time. What do in this business? We generate leads, we make offers, and we meet buyers. If we can boil it down to those 3 things, right? When your feet hit the floor in the morning, what am I going to do today? Those 3. Either you or somebody on your behalf, on your team. We got to generate leads, we got to make offers, and we got to meet buyers.
Mm-hmm.
Let's boil it down to those 3. And we'll start getting the results.
Cool.
So, good stuff.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Who else? Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah. I have a question about what you were just talking about. So when you're approaching a seller, you know, if they
yep.
set on their house, whatever, maybe 4 months, like the example you just shared, how is it better for them to know that we are the wholesaler trying to resell their property versus a realtor coming in? What's the difference for them? What's
the main thing is they're gonna have to pay a real estate agent, and if they do a traditional sale, you're probably looking at 6% of the sale price goes to agents, whereas investors buy and sell without fees attached to it.
Okay.
That's the primary benefit. It's just usually we can get a better price to the seller. Now, what's going to happen in this case, most likely, depends on the condition of the house and if they're really motivated or not, but a traditional real estate agent's going to go through the house if it needs work and say, I can't sell this. You know, this thing needs repairs. So I'll be happy to list it for you, but here's what you're going to have to do to it. You know,
right.
fix the roof, replace the furnace, clean it up, blah, 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 blah. You're going to have to come out of pocket for this. Then give me the listing and I'll move this thing for you. Well, 9 times out of 10, the homeowner doesn't have the money to do it. So now they're stuck. And so that's what Mike has to figure out is why the for sale by owner, what are they looking for? It could be different. Maybe they've tried to sell it through a real estate agent. I don't know. But that's the thing is just through some questions, you know, try and figure out what's the story. Why is it sitting there? Do they need to sell? It's been sitting for 4 months, right? Are they starting to lose more and more sleep the longer this thing sits on the market? And that answer may be no. It might be no, in which case there's probably not a deal there. But the owner at least took the initiative to list it. So they've already given us a clue that they would prefer to live life not owning this property, right?
Right.
So, yep. Yeah, you just have to dig in. That's what the script is designed to do. And then really you're just, like I said, you're sniffing out motivation. And not everybody's motivated to sell, but, you know, a lot of homeowners are, and those are the ones that we talk to and make offers to. Did I answer that, Sherry? What else? What other questions do you have?
Yeah, that was helpful.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I do have another question. excuse me, I'm sorry. I was just wondering, you know, I'm only within Module 2 here, and maybe there's more information as we go along. But, you know, when you decide to do a fix and flip, you know, I've, you know, read books and I've sold houses, my own houses, of course, and there's
mm-hmm.
guidelines as far as what money you would put into them to get the biggest bang for your buck, right? Do you
yep.
kind of guide us with that?
I can. I can tell you from my own experience, but what I would tell you would probably be even more valuable is look up recent sales. And FreedomSoft has them, or you could go to a real estate agent. And typically, when houses recently sold, again, you can go back to Zillow. And a lot of times, those MLS photos find their way onto Zillow. They get captured on there.
Right.
And so you could see in the neighborhood what do in the last 90 days, the, you know, 3 to 6 months, the houses that are pulling the highest price per square footage in this neighborhood, what do they look like? Now, most often, it's kitchens and bathrooms, right? We've all heard this. Kitchens and bathrooms sell houses.
Right.
So people, you know, back in the day, kitchens weren't the center of the house, and so they were closed off, usually had walls all the way around them and one or two small entrances, and that's totally changed. Now, in, you know, just about all new construction, you see a kitchen that moves without any walls into a dining space or a living area or whatever, so anybody can stand in the kitchen and watch the football game or whatever the case. So, you know, where the house is opened up, what level did they rehab the kitchens to? Is, you know, are there granite countertops in there, you know, tile floors? And I would say just blend in. That's how we've always
okay,
handled it.
That's good information.
Yep. Just become like the you don't have to reinvent the wheel, right? Just go to what worked. And most often, those pictures are still readily available online. Sometimes you can even just Google the address. Don't even go to Zillow. Just go to Google and put in 123 Main Street and then hit photos. You know, up at the top in Google, I think it says images. you can do a web search or whatever, and then you can hit images, and it'll just pull up images. A lot of times, if it was recently listed, you can see photos of that house.
Okay.
Yep. And the easier way is to just find those fix and flip investors and wholesale them a sweet deal. Make 15 grand and move on with zero risk. That's still my favorite.
Can you say that again?
Oh, I said that. What I like even more than that is just find out who those investors are and wholesale them a fix and flip and
okay,
make, you know, 10, 15, 20 grand with zero risk and no cash borrowed. That's still a sweet way to live. Nothing better. Even here's the thing. Even if you want to, you know, Rob, and I went over all this with all of you on orientation call. We are wholesalers first. And then, you know, somebody says, well, now I want to do fix and flips. Okay, be a wholesaler first. Why? Because anybody in any operation has a bandwidth that says, you know, we can handle one project at a time. We can handle five. We can handle 10. But everybody has a limit. Resources, you know, people resources, money resources, whatever. Everybody has a limit. So the typical fix and flip investor says, okay, I can handle three projects at a time. So when they have two, they, you know, they start maybe a postcard or talking to other wholesalers, trying to find a deal. And then they find a deal and they say, okay, now I'm at three, so I'm going to quit looking. And they go about fixing up their three deals. And then, you know, hopefully get one done, sell it. Okay, now I got to find another deal. What Rob has always taught is never stop generating leads. Never stop making offers. And then what happens is, right, and always be building a buyer's list. So be wholesaler. Even if you want to do fix and flip, be wholesaler. Why? Because we never turn off lead gen. So if we're moving along and we need a deal, and we've got leads and we find one, then we can move it over to our fix and flip company, and now we're running at our three current projects. But in the meantime, if you find another deal or two deals or three deals while you're fixing up the other ones, and they're good deals, and you know how to tie them up and wholesale them, and you have a buyer's list, you can turn $5,000 checks, $10,000 checks, $15,000 checks while you're doing the rehab. So why wouldn't you operate that way? That just makes more sense. So that's why wholesaling is the foundation for all of this. And then you say, okay, you know, I'm building a portfolio. Great. Be wholesaler first. I'm working leads. Okay, I'm ready to buy another one, our next, you know, rental that we're going to hold. Bam. Sell it to yourself or whatever you want to do. Put that in the pipeline. Add to your rental portfolio, and all the while you're still generating cash wholesaling deals. So that's why we're wholesaler first. It's wholesalers control deals. We've got two right now in St. Louis under contract. Our buy prices are $60,000 and $58,000. The properties need 25 to 40. We should see the inside of them tomorrow with our guy out there. So we'll figure that out. But the ARVs in the neighborhood they rent for about $1,300. They're right across from each other on the same block. A-minus neighborhood. Great location. They rent for $1,300 bucks a month. And so I think the ARV on them is 160 to 180. And we have them tied up at 60 grand. So these are some cool deals. And here's what's really cool about it. Paul and I get to control what happens with them because we have the contract. So do we want to, you know, fix them up to a livable condition, put a renter in there for $1,300 bucks a month and sell a 10-cap deal for $135,000? That's one option. Do we want to buy them, put, you know, $35,000 into them, fix them up retail and try and sell them for $165,000, $170,000? What do we want to do? Do we want to wholesale them off to somebody else? We get to decide, right? Because we generated the lead. So that's the key to the – I'm telling you guys, that's the key to this whole thing. And I learned that really early on with Rob, that we would have five great deals. but two of them were home runs. Those two never went to our buyer's list. Rob took them down in-house and did them himself.
Are you
and so I got to see it early because because that's how he operated. Wholesale, right? Whoever generates the lead controls the deal. That's where you want to sit. Yeah, go ahead. Did you have another question, Cher?
Yeah, so have you made a decision with these properties?
We haven't.
Okay.
Nope. I've got a couple emails out, and I'm talking to another two guys tomorrow who like turnkey rentals. So I'm going to chat with them. And then I've got another guy that I shot an email to today, seeing if he's looking for a couple flip projects there in town. So, yeah, no, we haven't decided yet. And we'll probably make our final decision after we have photos back from the inspection tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But I'm getting feelers out now anyway because the numbers are good. I mean, even if they need 40, even if they need 50, the numbers are good. So here's the case where Zillow said the estimate's 150, and I went into FreedomSoft and looked up comps, and I think 160 to 180 is more realistic. So anyway, that's why, yeah, when you go through the program here, you all sit in the driver's seat because we're generating leads. That's where you want to sit. Investors get into this game, and they say, okay, I don't know how to generate leads. I'm not going to learn how to generate leads. I'm going to go to some real estate clubs, find a few wholesalers in town, and maybe make offers in the MLS, and I'll hope to find a couple deals. And they are always, I'm just telling you, the top wholesalers, their best properties are not going to their buyer's list. They're keeping them in-house. The buyers in the area don't even get to see them. Like, you know, like they never existed, because they don't. So they're just keeping them for themselves. So we want to get to where we're generating those leads that we get to keep for ourselves. What else?
Hey, Mike, this is Hussein.
Hey, Hussein.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. Actually, I don't have access to the FreedomSoft anymore.
Okay.
It
would have been included with the term of your coaching program. I don't remember what that was. I'd have to look it up. So it's included for that, and then it starts to backslash 7 a month. So if you shoot me a reminder email, I can look at a few things online tomorrow and let you know what's going on.
Yeah, I sent you an email earlier.
Okay. Yeah, I'll check it out for you.
Okay, thank you.
You got it. But hey, I'll throw it out. If anyone on the phone wants to be a passive investor with some private money or know somebody, I got we got that 24 packet signed yesterday. So my head is shaved, but my hair's on fire. I'll be honest, I've never been in this position before. I think we have 31 or 32 deals under contract right now. So, yeah. ETL team, let's go. Got to make offers, Larry and Janie. That's for everybody. That's the only way we get there. That's the only way we get there.
All right. Mike, so I can chime in if nobody else is ready.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
So, we're just kind of had a little bit of a lull now last couple of weeks. You know, we come off of just kind of hips and valleys and, I don't know, trying to figure out what's happening. And, you know, yep. I made 45 offers and only had two of those signed. That something's wrong there, obviously. I mean, I think there's something either not right with the math, the area. So I've been really trying to just dig in, figure out what's happening, having quite a few conversations with my sales guy, spending, you know, a few hours at a time on the phone, going through what we're doing and just trying to just dial in what we're missing and not really coming up with anything conclusive. I mean, it's just just a matter of trying to, you know, get to the nuts and bolts of it now. But was having some issues with keeping track. I've got like 1,400, almost 1,450 leads in, and we've called a bunch, and we've had some batches of leads that weren't good contacts. And you start mixing that in, and who you've called and who you haven't called. So I didn't have a very good system to keep track of where we were at on a lot of the leads, so it kind of becomes overwhelming at a certain point. It's not.
Yeah, Ken.
You know, if you're looking and you don't know who you called and how, it got really kind of confusing. So we've had leads that we might have called 3-4 weeks ago that we haven't followed up on because they're kind of were just lost. So,
let me ask you this: in light of all that, what do you think has caused? And one of the realities is things will come and go in waves, to some extent, right? I mean, we want to be as consistent as we can, but you know, you flip a coin and it's not heads, tails, it, right?
No.
You go on different runs, so that's part of life and business. But what do you feel like has changed? And on these 45 offers, did you have verbal acceptances and you're not getting paperwork back, or you didn't have a verbal agreement and you sent an offer anyway and it didn't come back? Because we typically will send a contract if somebody has said no or is kind of on the fence, as a way of, you know, put a piece of paper in front of them, put a contract in front of them and see if they'll sign it. But 9.9 out of 10 acquisitions is on the phone saying, you know, does 17 grand work for you? Yes, it does. Okay, paperwork's on its way. So tell me what that process was like.
So early it was, remember, we've had some conversations about it where my sales guy, being from the area, kind of was had the assumption that nobody's in a hurry and kind of was delaying moving forward. And it took a couple of weeks to get kind of through some of that. And that was, you know, 3-4 weeks ago. And then we had a run where, I mean, I had like 9 offers in like 3 days. And, I mean, we just were really getting a lot done. And then it kind of just went off again. And he was getting a little, I think, at the same time, he's getting a little frustrated too because of, you know, what's happening. So it's natural. He's new. He's trying to learn. We're both in it together. So I think the motivation dropped off a little bit. And then,
sounds like,
you know, just trying to get things dialed back in again and getting him cranked back up. I've asked him about the conversations he's having and all that, you know.
I don't think you haven't been having him call through FreedomSoft, right? So you can't go in and see how many calls are being made?
I'm trying to get that set up. I finally got it set up on my computer, and I went to Best Buy and bought a little device to do the Bluetooth through my headset. And I finally, within the last 2 days, got mine working.
Okay.
And I sent him out to get his going yesterday, and, you know, he was actually studying for his real estate exam. So yesterday he wasn't making any calls, and that's the first day he hasn't made calls in probably 2 weeks. And I think
you don't have daily call numbers recorded, right?
He's been sending them to me. He's been sending me the.
What is he saying? How many calls is he saying he's making a day?
He's saying he's calling anywhere between 25 and 30, 35 a day. And I, you know, he's going through in the system, and I can go through because where I'm having him dump the numbers in the system, he's putting, you know, NIS for not in service or whatever, left a message. He's leaving a little note by the numbers because he's not calling from FreedomSoft. So he's not moving them up into the thing. So he's a pretty legit guy. I'm not doubting that he's not calling.
Yeah.
What I think our biggest problem has been the time of day.
Yeah.
And
when you were telling me what I was going to say, is he calling
him
at
and
different
I,
times a day?
Yeah. Him and I had that conversation like about 3 weeks ago, and then he started calling later, and I think that's when we had that big old run of contacts and a big old run of offers, and then I think he's kind of slipping back into, and I don't know if it's because he doesn't want to call at night. Now, today we had a conversation. He said, I will call starting at, like 3 in the afternoon and call into the evening.
Okay.
And so he's okay with that, but I don't know what happened, why he decided that now he's just going to start calling and starting at 10, 11 in the morning, and then by 4
you
o'clock,
said
he's probably petered
out.
You
said he's studying for something. So what else? He's pretty part-time with you, I'm assuming?
No, he's been full-time. He's been every day.
What's he studying for?
His real estate license. He'd been working on this since before he came on board with
gotcha.
Me.
Gotcha. Okay. So 35 calls a day is nowhere near part full-time. 25 to 35 calls a day. No.
Well, and on those calls, and so for each one of those, there's anywhere between 3 and 8, 10 numbers he's calling. So he's calling hundreds of numbers.
Right, and that's 35 leads or 35 calls? You said 35 calls.
35 leads, I'm sorry. 35 leads
okay.
with multiple calls.
Right, and how many conversations?
Oh,
like
some days it's not much. I'm looking at the numbers, and it's maybe 30% of the calls. And I think that's solely due to the time of day.
I agree with you. Yeah, I think you've got to be switching that up and having a conversation. Okay, where does this market work? And sometimes different markets are, you have different, better luck different times of day. So there isn't a... like just a black and white, here's what you do, here's what you don't do.
No. Well, let me tell you, he has a friend that has a call center and has run call centers.
Oh, and so they have tons of data on this.
And he's got also does real estate investing, his friend, on the side.
Okay.
So he has like 3 call centers he set up in the area and then does real estate. So he actually called him yesterday and was talking to him about what they're doing for their calls and the times and how they're – so him and I spent a lot of time on the phone today talking about that, which was a really good conversation.
And what was the feedback?
Go ahead.
What are the peak times for contact?
So his friend told him that they call – and they call on a 1-day, 3-day, 5-day, 7-day, and 10-day cycle.
Okay.
They'll call that same number.
Okay.
And that same person, and they have a completely automated system to do this, so it's pretty efficient. He says, and then they switch up the call time.
Right,
like,
and
by
the system's doing
a
it
couple
for.
Hours, like a couple hours. So if they called at 1 this first day, on the third day they'll call at 3, and then at 5, and then at 7.
Right.
So it'll automatically just keep them moving up, so they'll try to get a hold of them. His philosophy, his call center buddy's philosophy says that you call for one of two things. You're either going to piss them off so they tell you to stop calling them, or they're going to talk to you.
Or they're going to buy, right.
Or they're going to talk to you. He said, so by just staying on top of it and hitting them and hitting them and hitting them and hitting them, you're going to, and if you wait too long, if you call every 5 days, you're not annoying them enough to respond to you.
Right.
So he says you have to really pound the numbers to get a reaction. At least you can move it off your list, or
at least you know, right?
Or if it's the wrong person you're trying to contact, they're going to get irritated with you. Why stop calling me? I'm not the person you're trying to get a hold of, because that
happens. They may have a number, right?
So
you've got to put a little deal in there where it's not just left message. It's left message, 2 p.m. You just got to put a quick note in there so you can – I mean, you can start working some of that same stuff. And you've got to be using I get what you're saying about leads can get overwhelming. I mean, when you have a couple thousand in there, 5,000, 6,000 leads, you can feel like you're swimming in it. So, use the statuses for sure. And then it sounds like you guys are in the right direction. I mean, he's calling late afternoon today.
Yeah, he said he was going to start calling starting at 3 from here on out. He said, he wasn't real excited about calling on the weekends, but he says, because I told him, I says, from 10 to 2 on Saturdays, you need to be trying to call.
Yeah. And here's what I can tell you guys. I've gotten, with this current batch of contracts, most of the text messages have come over between 4 and 8 o'clock p.m., where my team will shoot over a text that says we got another one, or I'll get a phone call. More often than not, it's at dinner time. So I know that's when they're reaching people, is later in the day. Yep. Yeah, and so Chris, our lead guy, he ran a couple calls. He built a couple teams. And he said, you know, midday, you might as well go play golf. It's not that you can't reach somebody, but he said, we make hay before work and after work. And then Saturdays, like you said. And then our, you know, I tell our guys nothing on Sunday. We take Sundays to chill. That's just a internal deal. But
yeah, and for me, on the buyer side, it's not as big of an issue. They're answering the phone during the day,
all day long.
So I'm not usually having as much of an issue, but I am having quite a bit of problems getting a hold of buyers. I'll call and leave messages and leave messages and leave messages.
What message are you leaving?
Just telling them that, you know, I'm a wholesale investor, you know, working in the area and have some deals and just want to find out if they're in the market and want to talk about some properties that we have and just kind of leaving it at that.
Okay. Shorten it up, leave it really tight because, you know, there's just, it's one of these markets where, I mean, if you have the radio on, you're hearing ads for, Kiyosaki has a group and, there are a handful of them out there. Come to this free seminar and blah, blah, blah. And people are shooting out of these weekend seminars and I'm a wholesaler and this, that, and the other. And, I like to leave a really short message. Hey, I'm touching base. Here's where I found you. I've got deals. Let's connect if you're still buying. Here's my number. I'm telling them I'm a wholesaler, I'm an investor, anything like that. You know, let's make some money together. So try and figure out what is your script? And script it out. What are you comfortable saying? Shorten to the point, and always follow up with a text. You know,
to the same number.
Assume it's a cell number.
Okay.
Hey, just shot you a voicemail. I've got deals. If you're buying, let's chat. Let's talk. And then I don't get a hold of every buyer I'd leave a message for either or try and talk to. So, you know, just keep talking to people. I like to go to Craigslist and talk to the people that have ads. I like to go to title companies and property managers, and I'll call agents. Hey, who do you know that's buying? Because I'm fine selling through an agent and just telling them, like, I was just talking to Larry, just tell the agent to add their commission to my price. I'm all for it. But especially when you're newer in the market, who could I call? Who could I get on the phone right now that's really established in this area and that's going to know it? So I'm always in Facebook looking for investor groups, always, always. And as much as I hate Facebook, I go on there for real estate. Because people are active, and a lot of these groups, right there are a lot of clowns, but that's fine. Sort through it, and there you're going to find some people in these groups that are legit. I mean, Rob posts in the wholesaling houses whole time group all the time in Facebook. So, you know, you have some never evers and some goofballs in there, and then you have investors like Rob that really, really know what they're doing and, you know, 20 plus years experience. And he gives away great info in there. So, and he's met some good contacts through there too.
Okay.
So, I mean, places like that, but just keep looking everywhere, right? Try and talk to 3 to 5 a day. You're not always going to pull it off, but if you're at least making the effort, that buyer's list is going to start to grow. But back to what I was saying is, who's already in the area that's established? So, longtime real estate agents. I mean, you can call up and say, right? And I know I've mentioned this here before. Typically, when you call a RE/MAX or Coldwell Bank or whatever, some new agent's going to pick up working floor time trying to find a deal. But they work in the environment. And so it doesn't take more than a week, right, when any of us have had a job, you go in and you figure out who everybody is that works in that office. And so you just ask him and say, you know, they pick up the phone and you say, hey, I'm a real estate investor, and who is the agent in your office that has the reputation for working with real estate investors out of the area? And they're going to know one or two names always. You know, can you connect me to them? Are they there? What's their voicemail? So connect with those people that already know what's going on. Real estate groups, online, that kind of thing. But find the players, and then, you know, you can ask title companies, property managers, and then definitely when all of you bought your list source list, not all of you have done it, but most of you on this call, when you buy that list source list, it comes in an Excel file, it's Excel spreadsheet, and you've got to figure out, I'm not an expert in Excel, but you can Google this, how do you sort, how do you find duplicates, and sort by duplicates, and do that, and then you absolutely want to be targeting the ones who show up on there multiple times, because those are multiple property buyers.
Yeah. Maybe I'll have done that, and that's worked pretty well. But so I'm not getting down.
Hey,
it gets a little frustrating.
Yeah, do this. You're going to go through seasons of frustration. This is why we're going to talk about it, hopefully put some new ideas on the table and keep things moving forward. But do this. Go to the other find the other wholesalers in town and their websites and go on and look at, hopefully they've kept the addresses on there for their buyers, and grab those addresses. You can have a VA do this. If you want to grab those addresses and skip trace the owners and call them, because you know they just bought a property.
Okay.
So that's another way. You always want to be on the email blast, the broadcast list of the other top wholesalers in your markets. Always to see what they're sending you.
Okay.
What's that?
See what they're sending out. Yeah. Okay. I've been talking to quite a few property managers, so I went into the areas where I have these under contract and went and found 15, 20 rentals in the area, called them. Most of them aren't real, I've had 3-4 of them that never had any investor ever call them asking for information about their buyers or about their people. They were really caught off guard. Bigger companies, too. So I was trying to, I did run into a couple that were, I'll actually let them know, and you know, I've had a couple that way, but the vast majority of them didn't really know how to respond to it. I said, "Yeah, I just wanted to find out if any of your clients are actively buying and adding to their inventory." Like you had said before, it would be advantageous to them to pass on that information so that they get more properties to manage. But they really are caught off guard with that question.
Think about how crazy that is. They're property managers, and they don't know which of their clients are currently buying so that they can put more properties under management and make more money.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but that's crazy.
And they're just hiring people, probably, and putting them in a chair, and they're
right.
just doing, you know, they're
Maybe
just
so.
trying to get stuff done. But I've made some really good contacts, talked to some long-term investors in the area. Had a guy I talked to who's been doing it for 40 years and been buying houses from New York all the way to the Bahamas. He's at the point now where he's just settled in. He actually was really good on the phone with me. He was talking to me, was, you know, just telling me what's going on in the area, you know, where the sweet spot is on what he buys. And he buys in more of the higher end stuff. He's not the higher end. I should say kind of the middle of the road. He likes to buy at houses that are $150,000 and less, and then sell at $250,000 or more. But, you know, when we had that conversation last time, and I told you that the one little investor guy I talked to uses the city assessments for his value.
Yeah.
This 40-year seasoned real estate guy told me today that he uses the city assessment value as well.
That's crazy. I
didn't respond or react to it. I just, you know, I was just having a conversation with him and just listening and writing down what he was saying. But he likes to stay at 75% or less of the city's assessed value.
Hey, here's the thing. Regardless of what they're using, he just told you his buying formula. So
exactly.
When a deal gets tied up, you either know if it works for him or if it doesn't. And if it does, you know, that's perfect. I've never heard it, but now you've heard it twice. So,
in this area. So maybe it's something that was coached 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and they use it. I don't know. But anyway, so he still was very helpful. He was feeding me a lot of information about the areas and stuff like that. So it was a really good conversation. But anyway, so it's I'm definitely moving.
We got a break. we got to break out of the slump, and it's only going to happen with conversation.
Yep.
So
yep.
it's that until word. You know, we were slumping for a while too, and then it starts raining, and it just, you know, it's going to cycle. So, you know, bust out of it. You got to get a little energy back into it. You know, that's the other thing too, is to keep that acquisitions team motivated. I'm not saying that this is easy. I'm just saying that this is what I'm thinking about, you know, and you got to be thinking about as business owners. You know, how am I going to keep a carrot in front of them so they stay moving?
Yep.
And you really only have to do it if you're tying up deals, the carrot's there. You got to get a little creative sometimes in the down times, but.
Yeah. Well, I told you last time, you know, he was needing some money to pay some bills and stuff for his minimal. And, you know, and I honored that today. Today was that day, you know, where until we get a deal to the table, you know, I mean, I send the guy, you know, money to keep him in the game. And he's been very appreciative. I mean, I don't have any issue with working with this guy. It's been very, I'm very fortunate to have built
sounds like
this kind of relationship this early. Yeah. So
cool.
You know, I just think we need to just keep massaging as we're both learning and it'll because we did already had a spurt where it went nuts, so things were working well. I am having questions about VA info, but then I think it's more related to when we're actually calling, not necessarily to the date I'm getting. As far as that percentage,
you guys really
of contact.
You've got to commit to some afternoons
because
you've experienced the energy before. So And it can I mean, one phone call can get it all back. I mean, it's crazy how this works, right? I mean, you're just at sales. You're one phone call away from a guy with, you know, in our case, he had 24. And I know you were talking to that guy that had 90-some. And who knows
that ended up coming
back. Just one phone call.
We put that deal to bed. You know, we put that deal to bed because my sales guy was pretty excited about it and wanted to really work that deal. And he was he had made his last call to the guy. And I told him, you need to get him to a number. I says, we can't keep wasting time with this guy because I don't know if he's
going
to do anything or not. So he kind of was still wanting to try to work it. I says, when you get done talking to him today, you're going to throw our offer at him, and he's going to have to come back to you with an offer or else we're just moving on. We can't keep wasting time. I think this guy's either – so come to find out, this guy – only had 58 properties, like I told you.
Yep.
My guy, we had figured, you know, at the time it was the 100 properties was 500 to a million and a half. So knocking it down to 58, we went at him with like 480 to like 650 for the 58 properties.
Right.
And he come back, get this, 12 million for his 58 properties.
He's just blowing smoke.
So exactly, that's what I told him. And my sales guy after he says, you know what, that was a good call. Told me that was a good call. He said, now you got to press on and move on. I says, if this guy's serious, we would have known. We'll know and move on. So so that's where that's where that ended up going. So
crazy.
anyway.
That was the right call. Next time you'll get to it quicker. We were inside of 48 hours. This guy wanted 816. And Paul and I ran some preliminary numbers. It was decent at 816 for these 24. And we went back and we told our acquisitions guy, hey, if he wants to get to 675, we'll have a conversation. Until then, we're out. And he just shut it off, took it away from him. And 2 days later, he got an email and said, yes, you know, send me over paperwork at 675. I want to see how many hoops you're going to make me jump through. And then we sent him back with, we'll pay closing costs. You cover taxes. You know, we had to talk through. We had to figure out some inspection period stuff because we have a 30-day inspection, 90-day close window. But that was it. We took it away. We've talked about this before on here. That is the greatest sales technique ever. I mean, it's the most effective thing on the planet. And it takes a if you're not a salesperson, right, this is why you got to get a salesperson on the phone to just – you know, if they're starting to put up some resistance, you're like, yeah, this isn't going to work. I apologize. Let's not waste any more time for each other. And just however, you know, there's a thousand ways to do it, but take it off the table. And it just, that's what we did. We took it away. And so Paul, you know, I partnered with Paul on purpose, really good sales guy. He and I are opposite personalities, so we work well together. But we got him on the phone with Chris, and he's explaining, here's what he's doing, here's what he's doing. And Paul just told our guy, he said, hey, throw him. He said, here's what you're going to say. You're at 816. We're at 675. If you can't get to 675, that's fine. Let's part as friends. If you think you can get there, let's have a conversation. And you know, till then, we'll, that's it. And he got off the phone. And then within 48 hours, we got the email back. So that's just, you know, don't ever be afraid to do that. Take it away. Yeah. It's hard to do because we're like, wait a minute, we want to buy houses. We got to move forward. But sometimes the best way to move forward is just to pull it, you know, pull it off the table.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's why we go after a salesperson.
So I got a last question here on, So I got these two under contract, you know, I got 21-day inspection period, and then, you know, the one guy goofed us around for over 2 weeks that we lost, you know, quite a bit of time of getting the buyer to it, even getting them into the house or whatnot. So I'm going to be running out of my 21-day period coming up on the 10th, Saturday. At that point, should I just basically cancel the contract and just move on?
What is the feedback on it? And then what did you disclose up front? So let's start with, what's the feedback? Have you gotten buyers to look at them in the 21 days? I mean, do you know if your price is high, low, good? You haven't sold it yet, so if anything, it's high.
No.
Or
I think it's the area, and it's a little high. And I sent it out to probably 25 people, emailed the information. The one guy that was the most active, that was on me early, every day, he went and looked at it without even getting in the house, came from Richmond.
Okay.
And I think it just was so much BS dragging it down that he just moved off. I think the price was a little high, he had told me, because we had a conversation about it. He says, you know, I could go on MLS and buy one that's a little smaller down the street for like $50,000, and we're at $65,000.
Okay.
So, and he walked around and said, this house is going to need quite a bit more work. So I noted all that and kept it in mind.
Did you ask him at what price at what price does this house work for you? Did you ask that question?
Yeah. I did not.
Okay.
I mean, in hindsight,
so at this point, you're
thinking
sure. You just know that you're too high, but you don't know how much too high.
He asked me during the kind of the last conversation about what, you know, if I was setting on 65 or how much room I had to move. I says, well, we got a few bucks we could move, but I says, you know, we're not leaving a lot of meat on the bone. We're leaving it for you guys on the finish side. So, you know, and he didn't come back. That was kind of when we had the conversation about down the street, the one for 50. This is a little bigger house. But at that time, I didn't know that it was a duplex. It'd be double unit. So I wasn't feeding him all that info. But he kind of just was like, you know, I think I'm going to have to, you know, this one I think it's just too much. He looked at it and says, it looks like it's going to need quite a bit more repair. And so I didn't, he says, but you call me when you've got some other deals coming in. And he definitely wants to call me. So I don't want to just try to shove this down his throat.
Yeah.
He was very, very considerate. And we had, every day him and I were texting, he appreciated me contacting him constantly. So he was very appreciative of all that. So
right.
I think I have a good buyer
for
Richmond and for Virginia Beach.
You think you can move the deal?
I am not feeling confident right now. I got a couple of days to back out on my 21-day period.
Or extend and renegotiate, right?
This guy's a pain
in the inspection period. The seller is?
This guy's a pain. Yeah, he's the one who wouldn't give us access to the house for 2 weeks.
Gotcha.
So, you know, now if you go past 21 days and we don't go to the close,
don't go past 21. And here's the thing, if you're feeling like it's not going anywhere, and this guy, he really he robbed you of a lot of time because you couldn't even get into to inspect the place up front.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if he's a pain in the butt, what I'm hearing is, don't go to the 11th hour.
Okay.
And say, you know, this we got off on a bad foot to a bad start. And then who did you represent you as? Did you say I'm buyer, or you explained that?
He's fully disclosed. We're hosting dealer. We're just going to sign. We're not bringing cash.
I would get something over to him tonight.
Okay.
That said, based on inspection, time frames didn't work out. What we always do when we send this, and again, I'm not, I don't give legal advice, but we make really short and to the point that we are canceling this contract due to inspection, and we leave it really vague. If you have any questions, give me a holler, whatever. We just leave it super vague.
How do you send that in just an email, or how do you document
it? Email it. Email or attachment. Either way is fine. But as long as you have written, don't do it verbally, because you want written a timestamp of it, which email has.
Just do it on a letterhead or something like that.
Just reference the contract and the address, and just say that per inspection, we are canceling the contract as of today's date on this property. Yep.
Okay.
And fire it over. Don't go to the 11th hour. Just, you've got 48 hours left. In the event that, you know, the guy comes back and you said blah, 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 whatever the case, right? You're within your inspection period, but emotions could get involved and say, hey, it was brain damage trying to get in this thing. That took away a lot of the time, killed our momentum on this deal. I was able to talk to a few folks, but honestly, we got off on a bad foot, so let's just part ways as friends and however it gets handled. But you said this guy's a pain in the neck to work with anyway, so
it probably doesn't
get better. Because you're
going
to deal with some great sellers for the most part. Just good people, genuine, honest, and then you've got some people like this. So.
Yeah, for sure. All right, that's it for me. Here's
what I would tell you. If you've seen this writing on the wall for a while, the second your gut says, this doesn't work, and honestly, I don't feel like renegotiating with this seller, just cut ties and move on. I mean, we don't get deals under contract and not close, but it's a reality of it. Not every deal is going to work out. So
we're so desperate to get things under contract, and learning some of this stuff that, you don't know up front. You're just pushing to get something under contract, and then you find out, I should have probably had a little more due diligence before I did this. So it's part of the
pay.
You
came out of it with some knowledge and some experience. So
And I wanted to push it forward, because we talked about cutting this guy off 2 weeks ago because he was janking us around so long. But I kind of wanted just to fight through it and just to learn. Instead of just walking away from it, it was more to that than anything else.
Yeah, your gut, I know it is, because you were telling me that, hey, I should just cut ties, and you could have sent the termination there. And he probably would have came back and said, no, let's redo this. And you said, that's fine, but we're going to reset this contract. Something like that.
I want to get into him dragging it on or anything like that. Say, I don't want to provoke any emotions. Screw it. Let's just say, hey, you know what? Due to inspection, I'm terminating the contract. We'll move on.
Nice and big.
Okay.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
And you've got really, in the event he does push back, be like, listen, man, you wouldn't even get us into the house for a couple of weeks. And honestly, however you want to do that, but you've got to, it's not like, He was doing his part right up front. He was delayed and delayed and delayed. And
if it comes back to that, I can push that back on him.
Yeah,
because I've got text messages to document. I tried to contact him through text, email, and voicemail multiple times over multiple days with no response back.
Yeah, he was just silent.
So I got plenty of documentation. And when I finally that last room to go pull the deal off the table and said, hey, you know what? If I don't have a key by 4 o'clock tomorrow, I'm canceling the deal. Then he sent me, you know, some information.
Right, right, yeah. He's tough to work with from the start. So
yeah, so yep. I'll just see where it goes and we'll take it from there. All right, that'll work.
Cool.
Right on.
Sounds good. Hey, anything else? We're a little bit after what we like to. I like to try and keep these to 90 minutes because I know we're all busy. So, anybody else have a quick question that we can cover? All right.
Mike, I sent you an email.
What's that?
I sent you an email.
Okay.
You sent me?
All right, everybody.
See ya.
Have a good night. Yeah, a lot of good stuff happening, as always. Offers, 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 right? Don't lose sight of it.
That's generate right.
Leads. Generate leads, make
right.
offers.
Let me share one last bit of Larry wisdom. What you were talking about, taking it away, it's a classic sales technique called a puppy dog sale.
Okay.
You give them the puppy dog, they pet it, they love it, they do everything, and then at the right moment you take it away from them and they just go batshit because they want that little puppy dog. So
yes, they do.
Classic example of it.
That's the art.
It so works. You know, it wouldn't have a name if it didn't. I just had to share that.
Yeah, it absolutely works. Cool. Yeah, puppy dog, sell them. All right, everybody. Leads.
Have a good Mike.
Yeah, you too. Generate leads, okay. Make offers, meet buyers.
Yep. We
Five
got it.
Offers.
That's right.
All right.
Talk to you later, buddy.
Bye.
Take care. See ya.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Have a good night.
Yep. You too, buddy.